I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CauseMetics. .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hi, I'm Shanti.
And I'm Lynx. And you're listening to Muses.
Enjoy the show. How you doing?
I'm great. This is exciting. It's been a while since we had... a one-on-one.
Just me and you.
Yeah.
And a cat named Chester.
Yeah.
Sitting beside us here.
Oh, cuddly.
Oh, cuddly, ready to hear a story.
And this one I've been looking forward to.
Well, it's taken me a while, and I think it's important just to note and to remind, because if anybody new is listening, if this is their first ever episode, well, hello and welcome. You're listening to Muses and Stuff.
Yes.
Podcast about wives, girlfriends, groupies, muses.
Yeah.
In rock and roll. So, usually, or, you know, when we first started this podcast, it was just us reading autobiographies and then presenting them and having a discussion about these women and where they are from and how they met the rock star and what they're doing now. And then it's evolved into interviews with bands, musicians, women in music and the music industry, and then, of course, joining the network.
Yeah, Rock and Roll Archaeology. And, yeah, it's been amazing, and we've done a lot of interviews recently, a lot of amazing interviews I'm so happy that we got. But
so we've been releasing bi-weekly.
Yes.
Instead of every week.
Exactly. It's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. But hopefully it's better quality, too.
Yeah.
And, we're hopefully going for a quality and not quantity thing at this point.
Yeah.
So, thanks for everybody for sticking with it, and we hope you're still enjoying it, and we're still enjoying it and loving it. But today, we're going to go back to some Muses roots, and we're going to go back to an autobiography
mm-hmm.
and speaking about it.
Yeah.
I'm really excited.
This one is exciting, too, because we went on a trip.
We did.
A few months ago. We got to go to Graceland.
We went to Graceland.
And we get to hear about Graceland in the story.
We definitely do.
Yeah.
A real insider's perspective
on
Graceland. So the book that I read is called A Little Thing Called Life, on Loving Elvis Presley, Bruce Jenner, and Songs in Between by Linda Thompson. Who Linda Thompson was because of reality television.
Yes.
So her sons had a reality television show of their own, and they had appeared on such television shows as The Hills, and then there is a Kardashian connection. So it's weird how we're going, you know, from Elvis to eventually Kardashian connection, but I guess, you know, Hollywood and rock and roll is kind of, you know, smaller than we actually think.
For sure.
Another reason why I'm wearing sort of like 70s inspired today is not just because I was rewatching Mindhunter, but because we're going to go back to the 70s. Yeah. When Linda was with Elvis Presley.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Linda really wanted to stand apart as someone who had been there and with Elvis for the right reasons, which is why the book was written and released at the time that it was. So she actually didn't release this book until 2016.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's like why we enjoy reading these books so much. She explains that, you know, it's important to write about her time with Elvis in detail for the fans, but also for cultural historians alike.
Cool.
Because it's only these kinds of perspectives that can maybe bring something new to the table.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Because it's, you know, imagine everybody thinks they know everything about Elvis. And then 2016 comes along, and this book comes out, and all of a sudden, the cultural historians, the rock and roll archaeologists, have a little bit more knowledge and insider information on Elvis. So that's why I love this. Another thing that we mentioned about our trip was Linda is actually still active in music. So we had a pretty funny story told to us when we were at Sun Studio with Plez and Daniel.
Yeah.
And they said that Linda actually had stopped by there.
Recently
with her husband wearing like an Elvis hat or something.
Yeah.
Like, I love Elvis.
I think they went to Graceland as well.
Yeah.
That's so cool that she's still, you know, involved in that world.
So funny because I actually had a dream about those guys last night. Inviting us back. And then I was just putting on a little show today to just, like, you know, pass some time, whatever, and I put on Nashville. And I had to turn it off because my heart ached.
Aww.
Like, it's wild when you go on trips. We're so fortunate to be able to travel, but I have, like, a travel hangover for months after.
Yeah.
I have such travel blues.
I know.
Anyways.
I know.
Linda also really wanted to wait until she carved out her own way, so she waited decades so that her inclusion of the Elvis years would carry more dignity and credibility.
Gotcha.
That's the kind of woman she is.
Yeah.
She would rather wait, sort of establish herself in her own right, which she did.
Yeah.
And then release something, and it really was a book that really carried a lot of dignity and credibility. I like her so much more after reading the book. Like, I followed her on social media before, but I didn't really know her much outside of, like, just seeing pictures of her and her family, and now I'm like, oh.
I know she has surprising career things that have happened that you don't realize that have happened.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she's awesome. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She says, as the adage goes, you don't really know someone unless you live with them. Only two women ever actually lived with Elvis. Mm-hmm. I was one of them.
Yep.
So, yep, she lived with him for 4.5 years.
That's a long time.
Yep, she talks about the good. She talks about the dark. He wasn't a perfect man, but of course, he was a remarkable human. She says that her honesty takes away nothing from his absolute greatness, and after 40 years of harboring his special words and deeds to herself, she was compelled to share the story.
Great.
So,
glad
here
she
it
did.
Is. So, although Linda has had some pretty influential and important relationships, as you may or may not know, she was married to Bruce Jenner, now Caitlyn Jenner, having two sons, Brandon and Brody Jenner, but we're going to focus on her life with Elvis.
Yeah.
So, if you want to learn about being married to Caitlyn, then please read the book. It's so fascinating, and mm-hmm. it's wonderful, but we're going to focus on Elvis for the most part. I think it is important to mention, like, pretty early on, like you had just said, that we didn't know that she had so many accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
She is an accomplished poet, a lyricist, and had her own distinguished career in the music business, which includes an Academy Award nomination.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a song from The Bodyguard.
Yeah.
Grammy nominations and an Emmy win.
Amazing.
Yeah. She says, I have often declared that the girlfriend, wife, or ex of a celebrated person must be twice as good to be taken half as seriously at anything.
Wow. Good quote.
How true yeah. is that? And even though, you know, I think Linda is so, you know, she's on social media. We know she's still stopping into Sun Studio. I would love to talk to her someday, but I'm so happy to just be talking about the book with you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love doing both of those things.
Absolutely.
Yes. So I'm going to continue.
Yeah.
In her words, she says, I truly feel that I've been blessed with a life filled with its own set of successes, failures, heartaches, joys, and emotional explorations. In sharing it, my hope is that it may provide inspiration, comfort, humor, understanding, enlightenment, entertainment, and even a sense of belonging to another soul in search. The whole purpose of my career and of my very existence has been to connect with others on an emotional level. After all, the more we endeavor to understand and empathize with another human being's life, the more we unravel the mystery of our own, this extraordinary gift we've been given, a little thing called life.
Aww.
Yeah.
Good intro.
Yeah. So before we get into Linda's upbringing, mm-hmm. I want to say that Elvis and Linda had broken up only 8 months before his death.
Wow.
After having lived together for almost 5 years.
Yeah.
So it's wild because we've covered Priscilla, Ginger, and Margaret.
Yeah.
And the whole time that we were doing those, I had no idea that Linda had such a significant
part in
his life. Did you?
No.
Like, how did this go over everybody's head? I don't know. We're going to talk about little stories like how he would grab the back of her neck, press his forehead up to hers, roll it slightly to mug noggins.
Okay.
They would call it mugging noggins.
Mug noggins.
Yeah, mug noggins. And, you know, something his mother did to him when he was just a little
Aww.
Shaver. And, yeah.
I would totally mug noggins.
I would mug noggins him until the cows came home. So, like many women who have written about Elvis, Ginger, Priscilla, she says that he was not of this earth. He felt a strong connection to the spirit world and to the ethereal, and that in this world, he was merely passing through. She writes, maybe Elvis was home at last.
Oh.
Yeah. She wore a purple dress to his funeral, because Elvis always believed that the color purple was the highest connection to God.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they had a very, very special connection. Mm-hmm. And let's get into it. Let's start from the beginning. Let's start in Memphis.
All right.
Let's go back to Memphis. When she was a little girl, when she was watching TV with her parents, she said to them, y'all know what, Mama and Daddy? When I grow up,
I'm going to marry Elvis Presley. She, too, was from Memphis, southern to the core, which meant strong family ties, soul food, anything fried, and she says overcooked vegetables.
Wow. I did not know she was from Memphis.
Something that she had in common with Elvis.
Yeah.
Her mother married her father when he'd returned from 2.5 years of service fighting in Germany, Belgium, France, and England during World War II, and it was love at first sight with them. Her mother grew up poor on a farm with 5 sisters and married a man at 18 to escape her difficult life.
Wow.
Yeah.
But that man ended up being very abusive. Mm. When she was 8 months pregnant, he showed up at their house with a date in the car to change his shirt.
Oh.
And unfortunately, that baby did not live. The baby passed one night in her arms, which is why Linda believes that her mother was so protective of her and her brother later on.
Makes sense.
So that man wasn't Linda's father.
Gotcha.
She then met Linda's father, who was a hard worker, picking cotton, plowing fields, milking cows.
Sounds like something you'd do in Memphis.
They were selfless towards their children. And her relationship with her mother grew to be difficult and grew to be more difficult when her mother lost control of her sensibilities.
Oh.
So, of course, we know back then not much help in the Department of Mental Health.
Yeah.
You know, trauma, abuse, which her mother most
definitely suffered from.
Yeah. So she said her mother would have tantrums, throw things at her father, and their money problems didn't help. Although her mother did try to instill in her that Linda should never be ashamed of being poor.
Hmm.
So because of her mom's temperament, as a child, Linda learned to walk on eggshells as not to disrupt anything or anyone.
Gotcha.
Which would come into play later on during her relationship with Elvis.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Of her mother, Linda says, "My mother was beautiful, bright, talented, and had a wonderful sense of humor, but she seldom got to let any of those attributes fully flower. She was also incredibly kind towards animals, instructing me early on that animals were at the mercy of the world." Mm. "I'm sure my animal advocacy began early and that I was influenced by her tender teachings." So, yeah, Linda is an advocate for many things, and, you know, animals is one of those things, but it's such a story that we've heard over and over again, and it reminds me of the story that Dorothy told us about her mother.
Yeah.
Just that these women only had one choice.
Yeah.
They only had one option.
Yeah.
And so how could they really have that opportunity to fully flower into themselves? It's something that we take for granted, I think,
sure,
as young women.
For sure.
In 2018.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Of her mother, she said she also had an alto voice, and her mom seemed happiest singing or at the piano. So music was a big part of the family's life. At big family gatherings, there would be lots of singing. She actually used to go to the movies with her daddy to see Elvis.
Aww.
Yeah, that she said, like, that's your standard Southern upbringing.
That sounds awesome.
You go to the movies to watch Elvis on the big screen.
Yeah.
Things weren't all, you know, hunky-dory, of course. She remembers, she talks about being young, being at a park, and getting a drink of water from the fountain, and her mother stopping her and saying, "Not that one, honey. You have to drink from this one that says whites only." And her mom didn't even really know how to explain that, but that's just how things were.
Yeah.
And she knew that wasn't kind of right from that time.
I got you.
It's wild that, you know, Linda is, you know, posting on social media, and hopefully we can talk to her someday. And, like, that was her reality as a child. That was not that far, like, that long ago.
No, it wasn't.
It's like you're reminded of these things when you read books like this.
Yeah, yeah. This is still part of people's history that are still walking around, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We make progress, but then you look at the news today and it's like, it's not that much progress.
Ugh.
We could do better.
Yes.
Far, far better.
Second note, girl. When she was a child, when she was 9, that's when she started writing poetry.
Awesome.
So it became a very important part of her life.
Yeah.
Yeah. She also talks about Elvis's childhood.
like things that he told her. Like we know that Elvis is a mama's boy.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But she tells us that he actually slept in the same bed as his mama and daddy until he was 9 years old.
No, 9?
Yeah.
Wow, such a mama's boy.
Yeah.
No wonder he was devastated when she passed.
Yeah. When he was little, he felt that he got saved and was filled with the Holy Spirit. One day, he went home and gave away pretty much all of his treasured possessions to neighborhood kids. Oh. She says that's when Elvis's legendary spirit of generosity yeah. was born.
Yeah, he loved giving things away, didn't he?
Yeah, but only when people didn't ask for them.
Yes.
Vernon, Elvis's father, told her that he believed that Jesse, Elvis's twin brother, who died at birth, was the reason why Elvis had such, you know, character and charm and talents, and it was Jesse's influence that was a reason for Elvis's paradoxical, dichotomous nature.
Okay.
The twins, yeah. The Gemini or whatever. Not that he was a Gemini. Capricorn?
I'm not sure.
Birthday in January?
I don't know the horoscope.
I believe.
That well.
Okay. I might be wrong. In high school, Linda was a goody two-shoes. She never drank or did drugs and was voted homecoming queen.
She looks like a homecoming queen.
I know. She's so cute. And, like, some of her outfits in here are so awesome that, like, I'm pretty sure, because I read this book in the summer, I was inspired to dress like her.
Yeah.
And even when we went to Graceland, I kind of wanted to have, like, that kind of look. But I think I was so tired at the end of the trip.
Oh, my God, yeah. And plus, it was so hot there.
Yeah.
Hard to just go with whatever works, you know, at that point.
She had a teacher who inspired her and encouraged her love of writing and literature. So hooray for awesome teachers. She's a homebody herself. She lived at home during university, commuting to Memphis State University, studying English Lit and theater.
Amazing.
Yeah. So she was in pageants. She won pageants. She won Miss Mid-South, the queen of the Mid-South Fair, and she got a scholarship by winning the West Tennessee Okra Festival that qualified her for the Miss Tennessee America.
This is amazing.
I know. She said, like, there wasn't such a stigma in pageants and stuff back then, is there?
Yeah, it was a way for women to get ahead, like, in a world where, you know, not every woman could. It was a way out, right?
Exactly. And she put herself through university because she used the money that she won from winning 7 concurrent titles to go to school.
Yeah. There was a purpose behind it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
When she was 22 years old and at Memphis State, she dreamed of going to L.A. or New York to have a variety show, write sketches, or do her own musical comedy. And this is funny. This is how Southern Baptist she was. Her friend Jeanne wanted to go to TGI Fridays one night, and she replied, "Oh, we can't go in there as unescorted ladies because they serve alcohol in that establishment, and we'll look like pickup girls."
Not like pickup girls.
Like pickup girls.
No. Aww.
But Jeanne, bless her heart, convinced her to go into TGI Fridays unescorted. And they ran into a friend who was in the music business, bought them lunch, so they ended up getting picked up, and asked if they wanted to meet Elvis that night.
Well, that's quite a pickup.
Yeah. So, thank goodness. They were unescorted.
Yeah.
He was screening a movie at the Memphian Theater. That could be a typo on my part. Okay. It could be a Memphis Theater.
Yeah.
It could be a Memphian Theater. You know, we're
busy. It works.
Even though they both had a modeling gig that night, they found substitutes.
Good for them.
And agreed to go meet Elvis.
That's a good substitute.
And in the lobby is where it happened.
Yeah.
Elvis was in a black suede cape with a red satin lining and black pants with a flared leg, black stage boots and big sunglasses. He came on through the door. so they didn't know he was coming in through that door, like the people that were working there. So they ended up shining a flashlight when the door was opening and they shined it in Elvis's face. And so he was like,
what's this?
Kind of pissed.
Yeah.
And then I think he had a flashlight. He accidentally shone it in Linda's face. But then when he dropped the light, he saw her. He went, oh, excuse me. Hello, honey. And she felt his extraordinary presence immediately.
He definitely had a type, too, didn't he?
And what's that?
Just beautiful. I feel like Linda and Priscilla have a similar thing going on, and Ginger, for sure.
Oh, just, like, fucking naturally gorgeous?
Yeah.
Young?
Yeah, all the above.
Virginal?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he had a type.
He did. He had a type, and I love Elvis, but he had a complex.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to read to you, in Linda's words.
Oh, please.
About meeting Elvis and just, like, him in that moment. In the summer of 1972, when I met him, Elvis was in his prime. He was 37 years old, 6'1", and on the slender side for him, probably weighing about 165 or 170 pounds. He had an incredible physique, a noticeable physicality, a great bone structure even. It was as if it wasn't just his build and his features that were perfectly crafted, but also his skeletal structure. Before then, and later on, of course, he famously battled his weight, which always fluctuated at least 10 pounds. His mother had had problems with her weight, and he loved to eat. But for this moment in time, he was perfection incarnate.
Wow. So that's a great description.
Yeah.
When, you definitely, like, feel the presence.
Like, she said that when he fell asleep beside her, she would just stare at his face and study his pores. When David Stanley introduced them, he said, hey, boss, this is Miss Tennessee Universe, Linda Thompson. And he introduced her friend Jan as Miss Rhode Island, Jan LeMay, who, of course, was trying to make eyes with Elvis.
Yeah.
But he was smitten with Linda.
Well, can't have everyone, right?
Yeah. Well.
Well, it's Mr. Elvis.
So
I meant Jan can't have everyone, but.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So Linda actually teased him a little bit about his outfit, saying something about, like, aren't you hot in that? Like, it's
You're
Memphis.
Wearing a cape.
Yeah.
In Memphis.
Yeah. But he kind of said, everywhere I go is air-conditioned.
Uh-huh.
And she said something about him looking like Dracula, and it made him laugh. So that's good.
It works.
After some small talk, they all went in and to watch the movie. They weren't sitting next to each other at first.
At first.
She was sitting beside Jan, and then she was sitting beside someone else. I forgot who. And then she felt the person beside her move and somebody else plop down beside her.
Some musical chair action happening here.
That's right.
Okay.
And another than Elvis.
Yeah.
Aaron Presley sitting beside her in the movie theater. And, of course, she was, like, excited, but she was like, he's married, so nothing's going to happen. But guess what?
Priscilla and him.
They weren't together anymore.
Exactly.
She didn't know that, though.
Yeah.
So, she was shocked when he pulled the old... yeah, an arm around behind the seat trick, and then he started hugging her. She was resistant, pulling back. She really was a good Southern Baptist girl, even if it was Elvis.
Yeah.
And then he said to her, honey, you know I'm not married anymore. So that night, he kissed her.
She was like, oh, okay, oh, well, that right. changes things.
Yep. Yep, he kissed her. His lips were really sweet and soft. He was sensual and intense. And they kissed and hugged the whole movie.
Aww.
You can imagine how the, like, when the movie ended, how the energy must have felt
in the
room.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Because everybody knows
of
when
course.
Elvis gets up to move.
Of course. And if the theater, if they were still sitting around, like, was Jan still sitting beside her?
Yeah.
Like, thanks for ignoring me.
Yeah. Her name is spelled J-E-A-N-N-E, which might be
Jean? Maybe. Well,
but it's like this house, so could it be like Jean?
It could be.
We'll ask Linda when we talk to her.
Yes.
So she got a phone call that night.
Of course.
From Elvis.
Yep.
A little slurry. Telling her that he was so happy they had met, that she was everything he was looking for, and that he wanted to be with her.
Wow. Those are some heavy declarations for one night.
Yeah. The next day, she went to Graceland. Right. For the second time. The first time was when she was 10. She had gone to the Graceland gates with her Elvis calendar. And his uncle asked her if she would like it signed, because I guess he was sort of controlling the gate. So he went inside and came out with a signed calendar, which she believed then was from Elvis, but believes now that it was signed by his cousin Patsy.
Yeah.
Anyhow, 12 years later, there she was at Graceland.
I think that makes up for it.
On a date
with
Elvis Presley. And she gets a tour.
We've done that tour. Well, minus Elvis.
He was there with us.
He was.
It exceeded my expectations.
It did.
I can only imagine what it would have been like to have him show you around. Like, it was so much more modest than I expected it to be.
Yeah, much smaller. Yet the rooms were, like, way more elegant than I expected, too, for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, maybe I expected a little more, like, kitschy 70s.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, some parts were.
Yeah.
But...
In the best way.
Other rooms were just magnificent, like the peacock room and...
Yeah.
The blue and yellow room, I loved that room.
Yeah.
The TV room.
Yeah, so those peacocks were actually her influence. And when we walked around the basement and it had all of sort of the archived stuff, they had her name there, Linda Thompson, which, you know, they didn't say anything about Ginger, really.
No.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
She was led into the jungle room, which was a TV room at the time, but actually it was her and Elvis that redecorated it into the wild jungle fantasy.
Amazing.
Like, he knew he wanted it. She was like, Okay. But they still did it together. And they went for, like, not that day, obviously, later on. But that day they went for golf cart ride.
Yeah, it's a big area to cover.
She said he was like a little kid showing off his playhouse that he had built himself. And she, of course, got to visit a part of Graceland that you nor I got to see, or anyone.
Yeah.
Because nobody has access to the upstairs.
Yes.
She got to see it, though. Even though she was a virgin, she went into Elvis's room and saw his gigantic bed, tons of guns.
Really?
Tons of guns.
Just
like, guns.
Just all over?
I guess, like, on the wall.
Weird.
Maybe one by the bedside table.
Yeah.
You'd have to read the book to get the exact details. I didn't write down exactly where they were, but it was just basically big bed, lots of guns.
Okay. First impressions?
Yeah. They began kissing on the bed and baby talking, and just wait until we get into the baby talk.
Oh, no. No.
Oh, you're not a fan? You're not a fan?
Of baby talk?
Yeah.
In bed?
Anywhere?
No.
It's not for everybody. I myself am a baby talker.
But, like, what does that mean? Like, is You just saw my face. You're like, no.
It's more words. It's more, like, playing on words.
Okay.
Okay, so I'll tell you one thing. I'll tell you one thing, because otherwise I might get into big trouble.
Okay.
But cuddling in my house is called a cuddle buggle.
Okay.
That kind of talk.
That's a lot better than what I was
pitching. Yeah, I knew you were going to start actually talking, like, maybe like a baby.
Yeah.
It's not that.
Or like the way you talk to a baby.
It's more the... Yeah, yeah.
That's not cool.
It's more of, we'll get into it when the time comes.
Like cutesy talk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gross to some.
Yeah.
Natural to others. I kind of grew up in a cutesy family where nobody went by their real names. It was all nicknames.
I'd rather have cutesy talk than baby talk. For sure.
Yeah. So they're kissing on the bed and she thought, dreaming. I must be dreaming. So imagine the man wanted by everyone, mm-hmm. who everyone grew up watching, was now holding her in his arms.
Insane.
Elvis wanted her to stay overnight, but it was 3 a.m. and she had to go.
Well, good for her.
Mm-hmm. In the book, she tells things about Elvis, like, that he would tell to her. Like, for example, how he knew that he was blessed with such a talent. And he was so grateful for his gift that he wanted to do anything humanly possible to repay his maker. Which is why he, you know, wanted to share his talent and give things and that sort of thing. Shortly after meeting Elvis, she had to go on vacation with her family. And, of course, could only think of one thing the whole time. Mm-hmm. She says, the vacation was everything a great big family trip should be. But the whole time, I was awash with the wonder and the thrill of my newly made memories with the king of rock and roll, my Elvis.
Ooh. Well, luckily, she got plenty of time with him after that.
Yeah.
She didn't have to worry.
Yeah, she did.
Oh.
Elvis missed her while she was gone.
Yep.
And just in terms of their, like, relationship, I think we've heard this before. He never pressured her into anything. They took it slow.
Yeah.
And eventually, when she was ready.
It was like he let it be known what he wanted, but mm-hmm. he let her
mm-hmm.
make the timeline for
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah. She did spend a lot of time in his room, of course, and very quickly noticed the prescription bottles, at least a dozen.
Yeah.
He said they were for respiratory things, sleeping pills, all prescribed.
Yeah.
She slept with him, and he spooned her all night.
Aww.
She said even though it was new, it felt familiar, and even though she had never spent the night in bed with a man, it was, like, natural.
Yeah.
Okay, so in terms of the baby talk... Ice cream was itty cream. Milk was butch. Buttermilk was butter butch. And her names for him were not Elvis. They were Bunton, as in button. And she was mommy,
No.
Ariadne, Ari, Darling, Honey, and Baby.
Okay, not mommy, though. Please, yep. No.
She'd be the mommy and he'd be the baby.
No.
Mm-hmm. And I know that, like, my great aunt and uncle, they didn't have kids. And she'd call him daddy, like, in front of us. As in, like, because you do that when you have kids, you do that and it's not, like, weird.
Weird, yeah.
Right? Like, go ask daddy or, like, daddy, yeah. Can you come here and do this for me?
Yeah.
But they didn't have kids and they did that. And so I guess it was something that Lyndon Elvis did. But, yeah, he...
Interesting.
Yeah. So Elvis had a bit of a foot fetish.
Okay.
Remarking on her yeetle toes and how her yeetle toes just lined up perfectly.
God, he really was a baby talker, wasn't he?
Yeah. And so she knew she'd be in trouble when he called her Linda.
Oh.
Yeah. And Lisa Marie was like, Issa?
Yeah.
So, like...
Yeah.
It's stuff like that that I'm like, yeah...
Yeah,
I do shit like that, too. So, one of the difficult things with Elvis was, like, never being able to go out. Because the one time they did, 100 people gathered around them in, like, minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her book is really poetic. And, because obviously she's a poet and she writes,
It's going to be well written.
So it's very well written. So I'm going to read this part about Elvis's eyes. He opened his eyes and looked at me. Those impossibly long lashes. Those deep, soulful pools of blue. The depth and intensity of the blue in Elvis's eyes was intoxicating. His eyes were often described as bedroom eyes. I rather think they escaped the bedroom, though, and circumnavigated the globe, gathering beauty along the way. Elvis's eyes told his story and could be as mercurial as his personality, from the serenity of the blue Caribbean to the raging depths of the North Atlantic. They could twinkle with mischief, glare cold with anger, fill with tears of tenderness, and pierce your heart with the pain they sometimes mirrored from his soul. They were beautiful, and in this moment, they were telegraphing pure love right at me.
That's so beautiful.
I know.
Yeah, she's a poet, all right.
Mm-hmm. So she and Elvis were inseparable. So inseparable that for the first year of the 4.5 years they were together 24/7. Wow. Except for the times he was out buying presents for her.
Aww.
He once bought her a beautiful blue diamond, and she asked why he said, like, she asked, why did you buy this for me? And he said, because it's Tuesday, and I love you.
Aww.
Even when he was in the shower, he'd talk to her when he was there.
He really needed, like, 24-hour attention, too, like, put on him, huh?
Yeah.
He needed his lady there no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's also one of the reasons him and Priscilla didn't work out, because she was kind of growing as a person outside of him, and he needed more hands-on attention.
Well, I mean, I don't mean to spoil the end of this story, but how else could it have ended?
Exactly.
Yeah. She would sit on the side of the stage and watch him perform. She said that he was never more himself than when he was on the stage. To this day, he's the best entertainer she's ever seen. And Elvis, the world's most famous rock star, he was her first and truest love.
Aww.
So she actually did love the fact that he wanted and needed to be cuddled and cared for all of the time. So Elvis also liked to cuddle bugle. Of their relationship, she says, more often than not, I was the mommy and he was the baby. Sometimes we were lovers, sometimes we were best friends. We were all things to each other at one time or another. And Elvis was always, always everything to me. So she was willingly selfless in her devotion to him.
Yeah.
So, of course, you know, similarities between some of the women and similarities between her and Ginger. One of the things that stuck out was how he told both women that his mother told him he should marry a brown-eyed girl because blue-eyed girls can't be trusted. He told both those girls that. They have both that story in their book. She had a special relationship with Lisa Marie. The first time they met... was pretty sweet. At first, Lisa Marie was sort of like, you know, a cat, sort of like not coming out quite right away, but Linda's hair was so long, and she was sitting outside by the pool, and she had her hair draped on the back of, like, a pool chair, and Lisa came up to her and asked if she could brush it, so Lisa brushed her hair, and that's how they kind of bonded.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, and like many of the other women, Linda has a chapter called, not that they have the exact same chapter named this, but Linda has a chapter called The Other Elvis. Mm. And you can imagine what that meant.
Yes.
One of the first instances where she saw Elvis rage was when he was trying to get, when she was trying to get all of the men straight in Elvis's entourage, and she referred to one of the men as the good-looking guy, Sonny. Sonny's the good-looking guy, right? And this set Elvis off. He yelled at her and said something like, "Don't you ever tell me you think another guy is good looking." They got into fights about his guns. Once he shot one, and the bullet almost hit her because it went through two walls.
What?
She yelled at him. He threatened to send her home. And then he profusely apologized, as he usually does.
Yeah.
Now, we know that Elvis's highs and lows come from the mostly prescribed pills he was taking. But she also says how, you know, there were pills that weren't exactly prescribed, but... like
somehow there,
when he went to the dentist, and he went to the dentist regularly, he was allowed free range of the medicine cabinet.
Wow.
Elvis watched porn.
Oh, yeah?
Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yep. So, one time, he asked Linda, "Honey, have you ever seen a porn movie?"
I'm guessing she hadn't.
"You mean a pornographic movie?" I asked. "No, of course not." "Well, would you watch one with me?" "I don't know. Is it sexy?" "Yes, very sexy." So he put on The Devil in Miss Jones, and we settled in to watch. I was so innocent and naive that it didn't take long for me to be shocked. "She doesn't have any clothes on," I said. "Oh my God, you can see her... you can see everything. Look. Oh, oh my God. You can practically see all the way up her tonsils. Is it legal for people to get naked and do things on camera like that? Can't they be arrested for this? That's got to be illegal, isn't it?"
It doesn't sound like the sexiest time for Linda.
No. So, of course, Elvis started laughing at that. And so maybe, you know, that wasn't their thing.
No.
But again, if Elvis put on porno, I'd say you betcha. the way she saw their relationship, Elvis needed her, and she loved being needed by him. Mm-hmm. Before remote controls for televisions, she would get up and change the channels for him whenever she wanted it changed. She repeats time and time again that agreeing to his every whim was worth it because of the truly beautiful soul that he was.
Okay.
You know, he had a giving nature, and people called him Santa because of his giving nature all year round. He loved Christmas, too, and he actually had a song called... oh, sorry. Linda later on had a song called Grown Up Christmas List that she wrote years later that Barbara Streisand, Natalie Cole, Kelly Clarkson, and Michael Bublé all ended up singing. And she only wishes that, like, Elvis could have been able to hear it.
Aww.
And even record some of her songs.
That would have been something.
Yeah, he actually did, when she gave him a book of poetry years later, say that he would record them into music, and she said, "No, no, these are just private for us."
That's nice.
And speaking of more gifts, Elvis designed a ring for her and told her that one day it would be their engagement ring when the time was right.
Wow. He was very committed.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of committed, let's talk about Priscilla for a second. Linda, didn't have that much exposure to Priscilla during her time with Elvis, but writes about their first encounter. It was at a parent meeting, like a school parent meeting, and both parents had to be there. So Linda went with Elvis, but waited in the car. He didn't really prep her for meeting Lisa Marie, but he did tell her not to wear all of her rings when meeting Priscilla because he didn't give Priscilla nearly as much jewelry and didn't want her to feel bad.
Aww. Well, I guess that's nice that Elvis was still thinking about Priscilla's feelings.
I guess. But, like, why didn't Priscilla get all of the rings?
I don't know.
Priscilla wanted to meet Linda after the conference, which ended up being like a cordial meeting. She said it was nice to meet Linda, and she appreciated her looking out for Lisa Marie. So even though Linda appreciated that they could be in the room celebrating Lisa Marie's birthday, for example, and like back in the 70s, like, you know, that was maybe not as common.
Yeah.
Whereas like now, like it's common for even parents who are separated, divorced, whatever, to be in the same room and it's all good.
Yeah.
Okay. So she said that even though it was cordial, one day Lisa Marie did tell Linda, "My mommy doesn't like you very much."
Aww.
"My mommy says it's because when she was married to my daddy, he didn't take her anywhere. But my daddy takes you everywhere. You're always with my daddy, and my mommy never got to be with my daddy, so that's why."
Well, that makes sense. She feels a little jealous, I guess.
Yeah, it's understandable.
I know that obviously that's not Linda's fault. That's Elvis, you know, doing things different. But maybe he learned from his mistakes the first time around and was like, with this relationship, I'm going to make her more involved.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of the complex that we were speaking about like earlier on, Linda did mention that she found something odd once when she was talking to Elvis, and he had mentioned that it's not as much fun making love to a woman who has had a baby. He said, "They're a mother. They've given birth. They've had a child. You just feel like you don't want to violate that." Yeah, so I guess it sort of makes sense when we think about, like, the age of the women that Elvis was interested in. I guess the exception that I can think of is Anne Margaret.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had a more unique relationship. She's the only one that didn't have to sacrifice, like, her career or, you know, her life to be with him.
Yeah.
The other women had to kind of be there 24/7. And
oh, yeah.
That's probably why him and Anne Margaret didn't work out, because she wasn't as available to him as the others were.
Speaking of being available, Linda was monitoring his food, right? Like, Elvis wanted a feast in front of him, even if he didn't eat it all, because on, you know, the topic of complexes, he had one about being poor as a child and food being rationed. So if he wanted to eat more, he ate more.
I see.
Yeah. So she was constantly just, like, you know, at his beck and call for that kind of stuff, and just trying to make sure that, like, he didn't eat too much, but obviously it's hard to control Elvis in that sense.
Yeah.
She mastered his peanut butter and banana sandwiches, and she includes the recipe on page 86.
Wow.
If you guys want to make one for dinner tonight.
Have you ever had a Elvis sandwich?
A peanut butter and banana sandwich?
Yeah.
I'm going to have one for dinner tonight. Yeah, it's basically just like a grilled cheese, but there's way too much butter in it, honestly.
It
like,
sounds kind of scary to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know how much butter is in...
I don't, but...
A stick.
No!
Like not, I don't think like a big like
okay.
thing, but like a stick of butter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Still too much.
Still too much. She said that she cut back the butter as much as she could without incurring Elvis's wrath, but he never let her eliminate it too much.
A stick of butter...
Yeah. So, as their relationship went on, his moods were more erratic, and drugs took on a larger role.
Yeah.
It's a story that we know well.
Yeah.
He was never an easy man to control, but she kept an eye on him as best as she could. One day, he was very impaired, and he was going on about how awesome he was with swords and told her to hold still while he just swung swords around her body.
No! Oh, my God.
Which, you know, she let him do, but never again. After the Aloha from Hawaii special, things got very troubling. He was visibly more impaired on top of the weight gain.
Yeah.
And the scary part was that he didn't even seem to notice the change in his state of behavior.
Mm.
She says either he was on so many drugs so much of the time that he could no longer distinguish how they impacted him, or he was purposely taking excessive amounts of drugs, not just for their prescribed benefits, but because he enjoyed the feeling. Either way, he was fallible because of them, and it was clearly a problem I began to recognize as the stardust in my eyes began to fade away and tears for this man I loved took its place.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that must have been so frustrating, feeling so helpless and wanting to help this person, but it's hard with people like that, you know? They have to want the help first for you to give it.
Like, honeymoon's over.
Yeah.
This is a man.
Yeah. And one who's incapable of taking care of himself right now, yet at the same time won't let others take care of him.
Yeah, she refused to inject him with his quote-unquote B12 shots.
Mm.
And things were getting even more codependent, let's say. Elvis was hospitalized for pneumonia, which meant that he checked into the hospital and she checked into the hospital. Even though she was 23 years old and in perfect health, he insisted that she be near him at all times, and so he got a hospital bed for her next to him and pushed them together. He was the king, and in Memphis, this was made possible.
Wow. That's nuts. She couldn't just be in the room. She had to have a bed beside him.
Mm-hmm. Linda had an American Express card given to her by Elvis and paid by Vernon. It didn't have a spending limit, and she didn't take advantage. Rather than buy things for herself or him, she just wrote him poems. Love poems. She said in Elvis she had the perfect muse.
Aww.
Yeah. One time she did spend money was on him. She had a necklace made for him, which was like a cross, and he said it was the best gift he'd ever gotten. And I believe he wore it on the entire tour he did after that, and it was in one of the museums that we went to. Do you remember I pointed it out?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We probably have a photo.
Yeah. So how did Linda deal with other women? Well, at shows, she didn't love it when he bent down and kissed women during Can't Help Falling in Love with You. But this is what Elvis would say to reassure her. They love Elvis Presley. They don't know Bunton. They don't know Little Gullion. It's an impersonal love. It makes me really lonely to know that not many people know me, the real me. But you do, Ariadne. You know who I am, and you love me, and one day maybe you'll write a book about me, about the man, not the myth.
Aww.
She talks about him being very, very lonely and being worried that people would find out that he was real and flawed and revoke their love.
I like that he had ideas of these women writing books about him.
He knew.
Yeah.
Come on.
I like that.
In 1974, something was changing. Yes, the drugs were getting worse, and it wasn't just the women on the side of the stage that she was being made more aware of.
Hmm.
So she says that Elvis wasn't monogamous by nature.
Yeah.
Plus, he was Elvis. After spending 18 months solid with her, he was beginning to grow restless. He told her he had never been faithful to anyone for that long before. She appreciated his honesty, but she was conflicted. She was hurt, but also concerned that no other woman would take care of him like she did.
Hmm.
She was monitoring his breathing while he slept at night.
God, she was that terrified.
Would they know to send him to the hospital like she had had to do?
Wow.
Aww. When he did come home to her at Graceland, he was always happy to see her. It was relatively easy to act like nothing out of the ordinary had happened. And one night, when she was passive-aggressively asking him about the women, because it did bother her, even though she was trying to, like, push it down.
Yeah, yeah.
They were eating salad and spaghetti in bed when he threw the plate of spaghetti at the wall and yelled, "Just shut up! I know what you're talking about! It meant nothing! She meant nothing! No other woman means anything to me. It's just a diversion, a distraction. Don't you understand that? I'm around the same people all the fucking time. Once in a while, I need a little different stimulation, different company. That's all."
Jesus Christ.
So he kept screaming at her, took his pills, and passed out.
Yeah.
So she was pretty shaken by that.
Yeah.
And left. But shortly after, baby Bunton missed his mommy. And he was scared when he woke up and mommy wasn't there.
Jesus.
So that's what he'd do when he woke up and hardly remembered the tirade.
Yeah.
He would always tell her how much he needed her and beg her to come back.
The cycle.
The cycle.
Yeah. This is a familiar cycle.
Yeah. She asks everyone to reserve judgment.
Okay.
So everybody listening right now who's like maybe mad at me for making fun of Baby Bunton or maybe mad at her for going back or maybe just mad that, you know, Elvis wasn't that perfect figure, right? Because he figured, like, he thought if people know this me, then they're going to revoke their love. So, like, let's not revoke our love. Let's just, we're just
remember, they're not gods, they're men.
Yeah. She asks everyone to reserve judgment because unless we've walked in their shoes, we don't know what we would do in those circumstances.
Yeah.
I would let Elvis call me mommy, though. Ultimately, he told her, being with other people is a disappointment. She was his ideal girl, and he'd always think of her anyways. It always made him realize how much he loved her and how much he appreciated her.
Well, okay.
Like, I think people in, like, polyamorous relationships can, like, kind of get that. If you're with a long-term partner and then you have some, you know.
It's just a little more difficult when one partner is doing it because they feel like they have no choice but to deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah, but he, you know, appreciated her more when he came back to her. So, like, okay. She says that wouldn't have changed anything even if they got married. You know, like, monogamy wouldn't have been in the cards just because they were married. She says there's black, there's white, and then there's Elvis Presley. She thought that, you know, okay, well, I can break up with him and date a salesman, a plumber, or a Southern Baptist preacher, but any of them may be unfaithful, too.
Yeah.
Like, that's true.
Absolutely.
She said, I knew I had a lot of learning to do. I had to sift through all of these new experiences and do my best to figure out what was normal for the real adult world and what was distorted by the anything goes ethos of rock and roll. Hmm. Yeah. So in March of 1974, she had an important task. She helped create what was to become the iconic interior design of Graceland, the people, you know, that people know today.
Yep.
So the jungle room, the peacocks. And the book is definitely worth reading because she brings you through the whole process. But just to point out a little bit more of the mark she made, she designed the TCB and lightning bolt zigzagging through the clouds on the wall.
Did she also do the room with, like, the wallpaper on the ceiling?
She talks about it, but I can't remember exactly.
That room was fascinating. It's like a pool room or something, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She believes that she served as the inspiration for Mark Cohen's song, Walking in Memphis. You know, there's a little thing waiting for the king.
Yeah.
Jungle
yeah.
room.
Probably.
Just probably play it.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Also, the stainless peacocks were her. So
I love those peacocks so much. They were so beautiful.
Yeah. Some people may ask why she stayed. I bet Graceland is so beautiful right now in the fall.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Remember Thanksgiving at Graceland?
Oh, man.
What?
Okay. All year. Like, every season it must be something special.
Some kind of magic.
I wonder what they do at Christmas. Like, do they put lights up and everything?
I bet they do.
Oh.
Because Elvis loved Christmas.
Yeah.
Some people may ask why she stayed with Elvis despite the open relationship, despite the drug abuse. She says, I loved him. I stayed because I couldn't imagine my life without him. I stayed because the devil you know is better than the one you don't. And most of all, I stayed because I knew how much he needed me, whether he always knew it or not.
And you hope for the best. You hope they're going to change or, you know, realize they're going too hard or whatever. I can understand.
Yeah. Regarding his acting career, Linda has something to say about it. You know, that he had Marlon Brando potential, wanted to be, you know, more of that type. He was in the works of starring opposite Barbara Streisand in A Star is Born.
He had so many amazing opportunities that the Colonel,
the old poopy pants,
yeah,
was not into. So Poopy Pants said that Elvis had an image to uphold and that this movie would portray him as a loser. And so he couldn't do that just in case. And so the part, of course, went to Kris Kristofferson.
Yeah, big hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one activity that you might not know that Elvis enjoyed was going to the Memphis funeral home.
Yeah, I never would have guessed that one.
He had a fascination with death.
He just liked going and looking at the dead body.
He did. And so Linda would not accompany him on these occasions, but she would stay in the car. That's Who knew weird. That he had such a morbid pastime?
That's so bizarre.
That's why I love these books.
Yeah. Where else are you going to learn about Elvis's love of dead bodies?
And the morgue.
Okay.
So, speaking of weird and funny, Elvis did like to shoot televisions around her as well, as he did one night when Robert Goulet was singing on television.
Amazing.
I just didn't care much for him. So.
We definitely saw a television was shot at Graceland as well. Yeah.
But Elvis also was a really good boy, and he loved the law, and he paid his taxes. Besides the mostly legal drugs, he was pretty law-abiding and didn't want to get into trouble.
Yeah.
So, we're getting to the point in the story where Linda sort of has an epiphany over her own life.
Mm-hmm.
After Elvis kind of convinces her to smoke a little bit of pot with him, which she did for the first and last time.
Oh.
The epiphany was that she had very little control over her own life.
Yeah.
Sound familiar?
Very.
She was so overwhelmed with trying to take care of the king, keep peace and accommodate him to no end while trying to prevent him from dying, she realized living this way was unsustainable, becoming unbearable.
Yeah. Where's her life in this, right? Yeah.
Did you know that Elvis had a facelift?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't get you on that one. It was very mild, and the doctor didn't want to do it, but Elvis said that if he didn't do it, he would find someone who would. So the doctor gave him a small procedure. It was an easy recovery and pretty subtle, but it just kind of goes to show how insecure a boy was.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So she says that as she knew him, that was the extent of the surgeries, although there was rumors that he had had more done. So she was kind of setting the record straight. She was with him during that time. It was just a subtle procedure.
Yeah, he was still so young to be even considering procedures.
Yeah, well, like under 40 or almost
40. Yeah.
Crazy. Well, I guess in this day and age, like, I was listening to a podcast of a reality TV star that is in her 20s and was getting...
But I guess facelifts...
Oh, right. Injections yeah. and whatnot yeah. are different than lifts.
Yeah.
Okay. She was getting to the point where she was tired of watching him sleep to make sure that he wouldn't die.
That I can't even imagine the stress. Like, you're not even sleeping yourself because you're so scared that the person you love that's sleeping beside you is going to die.
She was, like, tired of living within those four walls. She didn't feel free. Their relationship was deteriorating. Elvis was getting careless. She saw pictures of Elvis and other women. She was humiliated when he introduced another woman on stage at the Hilton. He told her about this beautiful piece of jewelry he had found her. It was so unique, so different, unlike anything he had ever seen before. And then when he finally got around to giving it to her, it was just this, like, regular ring.
Okay.
He'd given it to someone else, happened.
Aww.
Yeah. One time when she went to wash her face and brush her teeth before bed, she came back to find Elvis passed out in a bowl of chicken soup.
Oh, my God.
He had aspirated his food, and so she, like, saved his life in that moment.
Wow.
But it was, like, no exaggeration that she was constantly trying to keep him from dying.
Yeah. Wow.
In her total devotion to him, she was losing herself.
Yeah.
She said that she did find out that he was on Demerol, Dilaudid, Percodan, and a variety of other painkillers, and sleeping medication.
And, like, all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. She checked Elvis into the hospital for a 2.5-week visit, and he was able to come off and to be as sober as possible as he had been in years. And around that time is when his passion project of airplanes happened.
Mm-hmm.
There was the Lisa Marie that he made.
Yeah.
They had more wild and crazy adventures. As you know, Elvis likes to do things on a whim.
Yeah.
So having the private plane
helped.
Yeah.
Linda always knew that she wanted to be a mother, but with Elvis, she knew it wasn't possible. Mm. He was already a big baby.
Yeah.
And she says he was addicted to drugs. I was addicted to him.
Plus, it must be like a weird thing to know that your husband is not going to, or either not going to want to touch you after, or like going to have a hang up about it.
Oh, I didn't even think about that, but yeah, basically.
I mean, that's got to be in your head too.
So she started making moves to be more independent. Mm. She started making time for herself and her schedule.
I see a change is coming to our lives. It's not the same as it used to be. And it's not too late to realize our mistake. We're just not right for each other. Love has slipped away, left us only friends. We almost seem like strangers. All that's left between us are the memories we share, times we thought we cared for each other.
She eventually came to the bittersweet realization that there is life after Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
She needed to start her own career. She thought about renting a place in L.A. Elvis got her a meeting with Aaron Spelling, with whom she worked with for years afterwards.
Yeah.
She got her SAG card and worked through the rest of 1976.
That's awesome. Elvis helped her.
Yeah, he did.
So that's a nice thing to hear, since, you know, he didn't want Priscilla to have a career. That was one of the things that was an issue.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Obviously, he did sort of learn from some mistakes, at least.
Mm-hmm. She says that they teeter-tottered through 1976 as a couple, and then she learned he had gone out with a girl in Memphis a few times that fall.
Oh.
She realized that he really was moving on past the point of no return.
Yeah.
Ginger. Right?
Oh, yeah. Enter Ginger.
Yeah, enter Ginger. And do you remember that story I told from Ginger's book about the switcheroo? Like, there was another woman waiting.
Yeah.
And it was Linda.
Yeah.
So she writes, "He was right. I was tired of being on the road, of waking up past noon every day. Most of all of his attempts to deceive me and to deceive himself. I was worn weary of trying to always be the understanding, strong, forgiving, loving, self-sacrificing martyr. It no longer fit me. As I'd soon learned, there was another girl, Ginger, whom he'd had put on the floor below us. At that very moment, she was in a holding pattern, waiting for him to bring her up when I left. I didn't have to hear him admit that there had been a girl on the plane to know there had been a girl on the plane. And this time I wasn't going to pretend otherwise."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for Linda.
Yeah. So from there, she sort of moved her things out of Graceland. You know, she says that Elvis had a tremendous capacity to love. He loved women and we loved him.
Mm-hmm.
But from there, she was living in L.A., wanting to pursue her own life and career. She lived in a two-bedroom apartment furnished with Elvis's furniture.
Aww.
And their memories from their time together. Elvis offered to give her money to buy a business, anything she wanted. And she told him she loved him and she was grateful for him and their time together. He told her to let her know if she ever needed anything, and so that he was just always still so generous after.
That's amazing.
In 1977, she landed a role in Hee Haw, a show that her and Elvis watched together. She began to sell her poems, which were being made into songs, and that year got her first royalty check.
Go, Linda.
She's killing it.
Yeah.
When Elvis passed, Vernon told her that he appreciated how good she was to Elvis, and that Elvis loved her, and that their family all loved her. She actually got the news of his passing, which we know wasn't too shortly after the breakup and meeting Ginger, from Lisa Marie.
Wow.
Lisa called her.
Wow. Lisa? Like, little Lisa?
Little Lisa.
Oh, my goodness.
Still a child, called her.
Wow.
Yeah, and told her.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Ginger and Priscilla were both at the funeral, and I believe that Priscilla had asked Linda not to ride with her in the airplane, although it was Linda that was with Elvis during those airplane times.
Yeah.
But Priscilla just wanted to sort of
be with Lisa Marie
and just be sort of the family thing. And Linda understood. Like, she's like a good woman. And she said that she felt a fondness for Priscilla and Ginger.
Mm-hmm.
And also Anne Margaret, who was there.
Yep.
Because he had loved them.
Yeah. They were all connected.
And they belonged there.
Yeah.
I love that about Linda, that she says stuff like that.
And they all had an impact on him and really loved him, really cared about him.
Yeah, she says, Elvis had been deeply in love with Anne Margaret and at one time even considered marrying her. He had told me several stories about their courtship and he had seemed to carry a lasting fondness for her.
Aww. And she did, and she still does.
Yep.
Yeah.
When Linda was in Los Angeles, she did everything right. She dated a bit, but mostly she spent time with her girlfriends, going to the gym, writing, and traveling.
Just being a young woman.
Yeah. She went to Europe for the first time. She says, I was finally free to pursue my own dreams and aspirations and to allow myself the luxury of time and self-carved experience to let my priorities and goals evolve. My mind and heart were not on a quest to find romance. It was a time for my broken heart to heal enough to even be receptive to another love.
Wow.
Yeah. So she was on an episode of Starsky and Hutch, appeared several times on Aaron Spelling's show Vegas, and worked on her blossoming songwriting career.
Yeah. She was kicking butt.
Yeah. And of course, like, when you're going to Europe and focusing on yourself and shit, that's when you find another relationship.
Yeah.
And cue Bruce Jenner. So now, I'm not going to get into this too much, like I said, but super awesome read, so I highly recommend everyone picking up the book for the rest, because I just told you half the book.
Yeah.
There's still another half left.
Yeah.
What I will say about her relationship with Bruce, and I'm just saying Bruce because Linda identified Bruce as Bruce before her transition to Caitlin. So that's why I'm saying Bruce Jenner. So the relationship was the opposite of being with Elvis. They went out, they went everywhere, they did everything, constantly on the move, traveling. And when they did marry, she walked down the aisle to an Elvis song.
Aww.
Mm-hmm. They were often on red carpets, involved in many charitable causes. They were the national honorary chairpersons of the Juvenile Diabetes Association and supported the Special Olympics. They hosted a celebrity tennis tournament benefiting United Cerebral Palsy Children Foundation, which was called the Bruce and Linda Jenner Love Match.
Wow.
So you may or may not know that they had two sons together, but I mentioned it at the beginning of the show, Brian and Brody. She talks about them in a sense of, like, I have a bit more of an understanding and a better appreciation for them because when I saw the younger one, Brody, like, on reality TV that I watched, I was like, that guy's kind of a dick. But now I know how the show was produced.
Yeah.
And actually it kind of got into the wrong hands.
Like,
their reality show, The Princes of Malibu, sorry, is what I'm talking about. And actually they were portrayed in not such a great light. Actually, her husband or partner at the time took control over the reality television show and actually made it about him and kind of how they were freeloading off of him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they weren't portrayed. So, it's just, you can't have an opinion about, I think, like, celebrities and stuff like that unless you
especially
reality TV, which we know is, like,
but not really reality.
Yeah. So she's got some good insight into her family and what being a mother is like. And, of course, she speaks beautifully of it. One thing she says is, I recently read that when a mother gives birth, she gives birth to her own heart. She loved being a mother. And they're all really active on social media. You know, you can tell they're all really close. And she's a grandmother.
Yeah.
Actually, another funny little rock and roll connection is that her son Brandon married a woman named Leah, who is the daughter of Don Felder of the Eagles.
No way.
Yeah. My favorite Eagle.
Small world.
Yeah.
Small rock and roll
world. Yeah. So, Linda's been nominated for, you know, a song that she wrote at the Academy Awards.
Yep.
She and her husband had discovered Celine Dion because her husband after Bruce was in the music business. Her close friends included Barbara Streisand and Lionel Richie. She won a Primetime Emmy Award for a song, you know, in the Best Original Song category. Like, she is a grateful and kind of like humble person who just loves her life. It's awesome.
I'm so glad you read this and are covering it.
I did too. Yeah. I'm really glad too. So I'll just finish off with this. Oh, David was the husband that she had been in a relationship with, and that's a really fascinating relationship too that I recommend people to pick up the book to
I'll definitely
read about
this
that.
Book up and finish the story as well.
Yeah. She says, I have traveled all over the world, sometimes with my sons and their loves, sometimes with my brother Sam and sister-in-law Louise, with my nieces with friends, and sometimes with a boyfriend. I can make my own decisions about how many dogs I wish to have, as silly as that may sound. After all, my dogs have been my most faithful and devoted companions for many years, giving me great joy and gratification. I have 50 fruit trees on my property, and I make apricot and plum jam as well as citrus marmalade every year to give out as Christmas presents and on other occasions for my friends and family. It is a gift made with love, time, and energy. Those are the best gifts we can give or receive. Perhaps part of my greater comfort living in my own space now is due to the fact that the three men with whom I lived and to whom I gave my heart so completely were such alpha males and type A-driven personalities. I played my own willing part in adapting my life primarily around theirs with no residual regret. As my son Brandon wrote in one of his musical compositions, regret is such a waste of energy, you can't go back in time. It is my hope and humble prayer that sharing my life's extraordinary journey and my heart's deepest emotions in these pages might result in a sense of connectivity for all of us who live and breathe. For no matter how rarefied our experiences as human beings, we share more commonalities than differences.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That actually reminds me, I watched a great documentary recently on Jane Fonda, and she talks about like the men that she was with, and all of them, she molded her life to theirs to like be the supportive woman that like they needed. And it's only now in like this part of her life that she's like fully blossoming as a single person and as a woman and just finding, you know, your own path and everything. And that kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful book. Great story. I can't wait to post it. I hope that Linda, if she ends up listening to it, likes it, because as we know at this point, a lot of the women are finding out of the episodes that we do on them. And it's, just always out of such love and gratitude. So, yeah. Linda, we love you. Thank you for sharing
love
your
to
story.
Have an interview eventually.
Yeah, and we'd
for
love
sure.
to talk to you someday.
Yeah.
And to everybody listening, thank you so very much.
Yeah.
As always, you can check us out on Instagram at Muses and Stuff Podcast and on Twitter at Shanti and Links. And go over to our network, Rock and Roll Archaeology, make a donation to the Patreon account. In the spirit of Elvis, in the spirit of giving.
Yes. Be generous.
Be generous so we can continue to
bring these stories.
Bring stories to you.
Yeah.
And
thank you, Shanti, for doing the work. And yeah, this was great.
My pleasure. And I can't wait to hear one of your stories soon, because as much as I love and I'm so grateful for our interviews, I love sitting down with you and just like hashing this out.
I agree. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the next one.
Okay. All See right. you later, everybody.
There will be peace. Sorrow, no trouble, love all I see. There will be
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favorite children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.